Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hi, guys, and welcome back to Adulting. This week, I'm joined by Lex.
Hello.
Lex is the founder of Cult Beauty, which is...
I'm the co-founder.
Do you want to give us a nice overview of what Cult Beauty is?
Sure. I started Cult Beauty with Jess about 10 years ago. And we started it as... frustrated consumers, frustrated obsessives about beauty. And we just found that as consumers, we weren't really being catered for. I found that I was being oversold products, or I always felt quite intimidated going into department stores. And it should be the other way around, because it's basically a sweet shop.
Yeah.
I mean, it should be the most exciting thing ever. We just wanted to build a beauty hall of fame that you could shop. So that was the original idea, is cult products from all over the world that you could 100% trust were the best that you could possibly find in an online store.
It's so amazing. And it has got that cult factor to it, because it is different from any other kind of industry. As you say, like within the beauty world, it's not got that kind of very commercialized side to it. It is all about finding the perfect niche for you. And you're saying that even 10 years ago, you felt like that space was somewhere that was very pushy and heavy. And how do you think that's changed now with like the rise of social media and the way that we buy and sell? And
oh, the consumer has changed completely. We've all become these massive skintellectuals, you know. When we first were starting Cult Beauty, I was doing all the customer service side of things, and the sort of questions that you were getting through then, people would say, "I have dry skin. What kind of moisturizer should I buy?" And now you get people calling up going, "So which AHA is in that? Is that mandelic acid? Is that glycolic acid? What's the size of the molecule? I kind of need to know deeply it's going to penetrate my epidermis." And you're like, I am going to introduce you to the founder, and she will be able to take you straight through exactly what she's used in the formulation. I mean, I've always been a complete beauty nerd. And I studied biology at school, and I just found it incredibly interesting how skin function worked. And I always found that there was this big disconnect between what I knew about biology, about biochemistry, and what we were being sold in the marketing at the time. It was always very much that kind of head-patting marketing, I call it, sort of don't you worry your pretty little head about the science bit. And just buy the nice, pretty packaging and keep doing it, please, as much as you fancy. I was always asking questions. I'm like, well, what's in it? Why does it last all day? Is that a good thing?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's with the foundations that say last 48-hour foundation. You're like, that's basically lacquer, isn't it? That's not necessarily going to let your skin breathe. I mean, stayability and breathability are generally going to be the same for some outfits that I have worn over the years as well.
I learned so much about beauty and changed my opinion of the beauty industry actually when I came on the Cult Beauty Retreat, because I, from a feminist point of view, was kind of like starting to learn about feminism, thinking, are these industries telling me that I'm not good enough the way that I am and I need to buy products to be better? And I kind of had this skeptical view. And then Lex sat us down and we had this talk. This was last year, actually. And I remember, I think I asked you back then if you'd be interested in coming on this concept of a podcast that I had, which I didn't think existed. And basically, you were just like, we take care of our health and we take care of our bodies by drinking lots of water and eating great food, and we think about what we're putting in our bodies, but we don't often think about what we're putting on our bodies. And you suddenly just completely made me do a 180 about what I realized beauty was, because beauty is whatever part of the spectrum you want it to be, whether that's like your moisturizer to your foundation. But the point is that we should take just as much care, because it is such a big part of our lives. It doesn't have to be an oppressive thing. It can actually be really liberating. And that was a narrative that I hadn't seen. I don't know if that's because a lot of industries are led up by men.
I think it has been traditionally an oppressive thing, because beauty was very much about social currency and a woman's worth in society. So it was your worth and your beauty were very intrinsically linked. And also there was this understanding that it had a best before date.
Yeah.
And you were investing on extending your best before date because that was all you had. So that was a really horrible standpoint to come from. But now beauty is about self-expression.
Mm.
So it's what you choose to be. Like, if you want to have a particular look, if you want to go for that super glam, Instagram look, or if you want to go for that kind of total grunge, greasy hair and like paint, like old nail varnish vibe, it's totally fine wherever you want to come from.
Yeah, I love that. And what when you were coming in from beauty, so you said you've always been kind of someone that's fascinated by it, you love the biology, but also you're a really stylish person. I feel like you've because you went to school near me, didn't you? And you were always into the
back
music
in Wells, Somerset.
Yeah. And you're so like stylistically, when you were kind of coming into this industry, you were quite into the music scene and like that kind of style. How did you break into going into this business?
So I was working as a fashion journalist, and then I went into branding and PR and sort of moved slightly from fashion into a broader lifestyle area. And then I met Jess, and she had this basic idea of cult beauty, and it just sounded like something that was so... It spoke to me. It spoke to my gut. I was like, I really want to be part of something that changes an industry that helps move the industry on and help it evolve into something much more positive.
Yeah.
And that has really happened. And I'm not saying it was us, but that has really happened in the last 10 years. It's definitely been helped by social media, but the beauty industry has gone from what I described before into something supportive. It's become a cultural movement now. And it's actually... you know, the innovation that's coming, the cultural, social, and as well as all the scientific innovation that's coming out of this industry is at the forefront of everything.
Yeah, well, 100%, especially with the movement towards like gender neutrality and like sexuality, it's now become, rather than your beauty, how much beauty you have gives you capital, you can actually get your own currency from changing the way that you look, or deciding that actually I'm going to express myself.
Yes.
And it's as you say, it's changed from being oppressive to giving people who perhaps felt like they were on the margins of society a space to explore and express.
Yeah, it's the rediscovery of the niche, the celebration of the niche, whilst also not marginalizing the middle ground.
Yeah. So you've been 10 years doing this.
Yes.
Along the way, how did you break in? Because even cult in of itself means that, I guess, on a small scale, it could have stayed quite small, but you've really become huge.
Yeah, I think, I mean, cult has grown up as its customers have come to understand what we stand for. And I think what we stand for hasn't changed, but the zeitgeist has.
Yeah.
I mean, we... we've always been really focused around the indie brands.
Yeah.
Because I think probably because I'm personally very attracted to indie brands and speaking directly with founders.
Mm.
And I think now we are in a time of founders, because having a human being stand up and take responsibility for something is a very powerful thing in society today. I mean, we're all sort of dehumanized on the on the internet. It's sort of very computer says no. It's emailing out to God knows where. Are you going to get a, is anyone listening? and actually having somebody to stand up and have an opinion. It might not be a popular one. Sometimes it very much isn't. I'm thinking about our friend Gwyneth.
Yeah.
You know, occasionally she has some very unpopular opinions, but she is standing up to be counted. And I think it takes a lot of courage to do that. You may or may not agree with what she's standing up for, but I think that's where the power is in, in today's society.
100%. I guess the idea of you've got to stand for something or you stand for nothing.
Exactly.
Yeah. And when you were, so coming, do you think you were the only thing of itself? Like cult, did it exist in a world that was very capitalist and corporate? And
yeah, I mean, we... The idea of not selling full lines was very difficult for some brands. They really didn't like it. They said, well, that's just saying that the rest of the line is shit. And I said, you are such a pessimist. That is elevating your core hero products to cult status.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, people don't say when you know, when then they're entered into a beauty hall of fame, that is, there isn't that feeling that everyone else is terrible. It's like, this is the prize.
Yeah.
We have managed to actually create a product that actually was good enough to be in a beauty hall of fame, right? And that doesn't downgrade the other products, that upgrades your brand.
But as you say, it's like that sweet shop idea, it's pick and mix. No one uses beauty products from just one brand anyway, or you don't buy clothes
they
from one shop.
They used to. I mean, people used to buy the same products that their mothers used.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's true.
And it was very much the regime. You would buy into the whole regime. And that's something that I always struggled with because I'm massively fickle. So the thought of doing that. Also, I think people want to invest in areas that they feel are their good bits.
Mm.
So whether it's your hair or your eyes or your butt, you know, people will... You know which bit you really like about yourself. Generally, people have at least one thing
that you want to. Yeah, it's so true. And even with beauty and things, like I will look at such different parts than my sister would. And like we will choose things that we think are way more important to us or want to focus on. When you were choosing like how your brand was going to work and how you're going to come forward, did you come up against things, kind of blockages, and you were like, no, we don't want to do it that way? Because you've gone against the grain quite a lot.
Yeah, I mean, we've had to make some really uncommercial decisions. I think it's been really important to maintain our integrity all the way through. And I think there's been times when we've been offered brands that we knew would sell through the nose that we've actually turned down because they're not cult and they're not good enough. I think that having that integrity at the core of what you do is essential. And the minute that you stop that or ignore that, you're failing.
Mm.
But yeah.
So I think we're in a culture, though, of that kind of business where because everything is so instantaneous, people often make decisions which is like, what's going to get me the most capital right now?
Yeah, and there's a lot of pressure to do that as you get bigger. You have a lot more responsibility. there's salaries to pay on a monthly basis. But I think it's especially my job as the co-founder to keep that core reason that I started this in the first place. It was as a frustrated consumer. Why was I frustrated? Because lots of people were overselling products and they were being untrustworthy.
Mm.
And I think that, you know, no matter how technology changes and society changes, integrity and selling products that are good is never going to go away. It's never going to fall out of fashion.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think I get a bit fed up with like the capitalism and the consumerism, but not really, because we're always going to have stuff, but it's this constant chaotic pushing of product after product helpful. Yeah.
And I think cult beauty's never really been necessarily about the new.
Yeah.
It's about good.
Yes, exactly. Quality. So what is new, though, is your new, what is it called? Sexual?
It is called Sexual Pleasure and Wellness.
Amazing. So this is branching out, I guess, from, well, I don't know. It's interesting because beauty is like, how do you define it? Is it the outer beauty that you have, or is it that beauty that's coming from your own full, like, self-fulfillment?
I guess it's beauty holistically. Mm. If you are feeling fulfilled,
yeah.
Generally, you will give off a vibe that makes you beautiful.
100%.
Without a stitch of anything else on.
Yeah.
So I think the way that beauty is now, it's much more of a whole body, mind, spirit concept. Yeah. And that's the way that I see it, through cult beauty. And the last 2 years, we've been through quite a serious social change. There's been huge social movements around female sexual pleasure, sexual health. What is the word? I've totally lost it.
Liberation?
I think it's liberation, but it's consent.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Sorry. Totally lost it. Around the concept of consent. What drives women generally has always been impressed on them to a certain extent. You will enjoy this, you will like this. Women like this.
Yes.
Don't they? You're like, well, actually, quite a few do. Quite a few don't. And so it's kind of shedding this chrysalis, a little bit of embarrassment,
yeah,
and a little bit of shame that's left over from history. And just getting out there and being honest about needs, about health, about what you need to be serious about and what you need to be very fun and unserious,
yeah,
about. And I think this category encompasses all of that. And we're launching it on International Women's Day just to make it an even more solid celebration.
Well, I think it is so important. And you're right, this conversation around female sexual pleasure and consent go hand in hand, because what's ironical, what I've spoken about sex so many times in this podcast now, and I still go red. I still have that shame.
I know.
It's so entrenched.
We've definitely said the word vagina a lot more in the office in the last month than we have in the last 10 years.
But it's so funny. I was saying, actually, I was watching with my boyfriend. Have you watched Sex Education on Netflix?
Not yet.
Oh my God.
That's my next one.
It's the best thing I've ever seen. So it's a British, I don't know how to explain it. They've done it really cleverly. They've kind of made it look Americanized because it's more jovial, but it's all British. Mm. But there's one character, they're all like 16, 17. And the girl, you watch her have sex not literally, but she's having sex, this character. And she discovers masturbation. And I said to my boyfriend, it makes me feel really uncomfortable. But I felt absolutely fine watching her having sex with a man. But self-pleasuring, both of us were like, oh, she's too young.
That's really mind-boggling, but actually, I think it is something. Felt that myself too.
It was like absolutely fine for a man to penetrate her, but her to touch her own body, I can't. And that is
weird.
I felt so uncomfortable watching it.
But it doesn't take long to get used to it.
No,
and I think that we, as a society, it's really only a matter of time before this becomes really normalised.
Yes, I hope so.
I think social movements come so fast now that this has been gathering momentum for a while, and we're really at a point where everyone is ready to talk about it. Everyone is ready to openly go on a lifestyle website and click sexual pleasure and well-being. That is my category I will be shopping today.
How do you think that's changed? I guess since you entered the industry 10 years ago, could you have foreseen this kind of category existing? Could you have had conversations about this in the office? How has the tapestry of it changed?
I mean, the conversations we would have had in the office were a little bit more kind of sharing what had happened the night before, but not in an empowered sort of general female way. I guess it's I cannot imagine. There was at one point we talked about bringing on a brand called Jimmy Jane.
Okay.
Who they had a neck massager.
Oh.
That was sold incongruously amongst their skincare. It's like, how does this fit into your... But apparently it was their top seller.
Really? So it wasn't actually a neck massager? Or we don't know?
It didn't look like a neck massager.
That's so funny.
You probably could use it as a neck massager, but it was basically a vibrator. And we didn't end up getting the brand in the end, but we had these conversations and it was very kind of tittery.
Mm.
It's sort of all this sort of slightly bathroom humour and being a little bit embarrassed about it. And when we first talked about creating this category and what we should put in this category, it was really funny because I wanted to talk to my co-CEO, Murray, about it. I felt a little bit shy. It was probably about May last year.
Yeah.
And I was like, Murray, I've got this idea for a category, selling vibrators. Do you be all right with that, right? He's like, sorry, what did you just say? I was like, vibrators. He's like, why do you want to sell vibrators? I was like, well, I think this is something that actually is starting to make sense as part of a beauty category.
Yeah.
It's wellness. Wellness is such a huge part of what we do, well-being.
Yeah.
And it just really fits. It makes sense now. It doesn't feel like an out on a limb thing like the Jimmy Jane one. It really feels like a continuation of everything else that we have on the site. But he was totally fine with it.
Oh, that's so good. More embarrassed. Start off
with it. He was like, well, that sounds like a good idea.
I think, do you know what I think it is? And I'm getting there a bit with what I'm trying to do with my work. It's looking at women as like multifaceted, interesting people. So initially, like when I first started out, I was like, oh, I do fitness.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't. I went to the gym for 1 hour of the day and the rest of my day I was at uni, whatever else I was doing. But as a woman, you're kind of like, I'll pick my niche. And now I'm getting to the point where actually fitness and health is about what books you're reading and who you're speaking to and what you think about politics. That's all linked, much in the same way that beauty is linked to how sexually fulfilled you are and how confident you are in your own body. And I think what it is women have been oppressed for so long that we haven't been searching the right places because they've been kind of co-opted by people telling us what the right way to do something is.
Yeah, and also we haven't really been sharing it.
No.
So another thing that came up when we were talking about the category, having another brainstorm, is when we decided we want to bring the LV Kegel trainer on board. And we started looking into the stats and 1 in 3 women have pelvic floor issues which can lead to incontinence at its most extreme. 1 in 3, that's more than people who have hay fever.
What age group is that? Every age?
Every age.
Really? It's fascinating, isn't it?
I mean, it does hasten post-childbirth, but it's not always that way.
Yeah.
I mean, you just spot the people who don't want to get on the trampoline, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's kind of... But actually, once we started talking about it in a group of, say, I think was it about 8 girls, 2 boys, 2 slightly embarrassed boys, and it was like, well, actually, it is a thing. It is something that is there, and it's like there's greater or lesser degree, and it's like, what's this LV thing do? And it's an amazing bit of technology because it actually. You actually put it into your vagina and it can feel how the contractions are working. So it can tell you if you're doing your Kegel training properly, if you're squeezing the muscles in the right way. It's very bossy.
As you said that, I literally just did one.
Everyone in the room.
I just went, oh. I actually had an app on my phone that reminded me and then it actually just made me feel really bad because it's just another thing that I didn't do.
I know.
The reminder would be there all day and I'd be like, I've forgotten.
This has an app with it and there's so a clever. Little floating ball and when you squeeze, it goes to the top of the screens depending on how good you are at the squeezing.
That's amazing.
So I was like, can we make this a competitive thing? Wouldn't it be really fun?
Have your friends all on it in the office doing it.
It would be like Mario Brothers. You could turn it into a whole little game.
That's really funny. That is, I have to say, I've actually seen it on, do you follow the Sunflower?
Oh yeah, I've seen her. I haven't followed her for a long time.
I think she advertises it quite often. I remember thinking, what is she talking about? And it was the LV. It's really cool.
British innovation. It's such an empowering object. And also, they've started working with the NHS now, and they're giving out LV trainers to people who marked down to have a full-on pelvic floor operation to deal with serious incontinence. And they've actually stopped operations by 50% after somebody's been using the Kegel trainer.
That's amazing. So how often are you supposed to use it, or how...?
I think it's like gym. It's like sort of three times a week. I mean, you can be like a kind of Arnie Schwarzenegger of vaginas if you really want to.
Because we've got one here, haven't we? It looks a bit like a sperm, I thought, doesn't it?
I mean, it does look a bit like a sex toy. So, I mean, it's got that medical grade silicon, and then there's a bit that curves round, and it's on the that sits on the outside so you don't lose it. But you don't want to squeeze too hard. It's like, you are the winner. Now you have to go to hospital.
Oh, no, don't.
But it's things like that, and starting that conversation amongst colleagues.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't a bunch of girls at the pub. It was colleagues at work. And actually, I think we all came out of that session just with a bit more understanding about each other and about sort of the female condition.
Yeah, it's definitely a conversation that's happening more, because obviously the programme named after the 100 vulvas photography exhibition that she said that came out, but they called it 100 vaginas because I think the idea was that if you put vulvas, people would think it was about cars. I think that's what Jane Garvey said on Women's Hour or something. But there is this now conversation where we're all starting to share. The funny thing is, we're all walking around with vulvas and vaginas, and all of us act like we aren't, with that, which is why it's just so ridiculous. But there is just so much shame entrenched with it.
Yeah.
But you've got a new, what's the hashtag that you're using?
It is the Vulvolution.
I love it.
So we are starting. Join the Vulvolution. And it's hashtag Vulvolution, isn't it? That's one part of what we're going to be doing is starting a conversation.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Across our social channels, whether it's period pain, whether it's pelvic floor strength, whether it's don't be embarrassed about having that conversation with your boyfriend about a vibrator.
Yeah.
It's how to check that you're properly healthy in that area. Go and have the smear test.
Yeah.
It's really, really important to understand, because gynecological cancers are not called the silent killers for nothing.
Yeah.
And that, you know, there's this stigma associated with them. So it's definitely something we want to educate. We want to start the conversation or continue the conversation or make it louder.
So when you got to the point where you were like, right, actually, we're gonna do this. We're going to bring out this new part of the website. What were the real driving forces? Like, what were the things that you saw that you really thought there's a gap in the market for this and we've got to tackle this?
I think we started wanting to focus on this category because it has been up until now so taboo.
Yeah.
It feels like we're at the right stage in society's evolution that people are ready to hear this message now.
Yeah.
Whereas I think if I'd tried this 5 years ago, I would have been shouted down as just either a bit of a silly hippie or just one of those feminists.
Yeah.
One of those ardent feminists.
Misandrist.
But the fact is, it's not about hating men.
No.
Because ultimately, a fulfilled woman is going to be way more fun to yeah. be with
yeah.
than somebody that's depressed.
Yeah.
It's having conversations, it's bringing about the education, and it's making it more mainstream. You know, you can come in and you can buy your mascara, and you can top up on your makeup remover, and you can buy a little vibrator.
I think it also probably, as you're saying, like, reflects how your consumer and customer's grown up. So your consumer yes. and customer perhaps isn't buying their beauty products to make themselves fit the male gaze. I remember you showing us on the retreat different types of eyeliner that were just really wild and wacky and weren't a tool for conforming to any kind of beauty standard. It was about like exploring the art that is makeup.
It's what my husband calls my myxomatosis look.
I love that.
Bless him. He's like, oh, I've got a myxomatosis look on today. I'm like, it is red eyeliner. It is really cool right now. And I do not look like an ill bunny.
It's so funny. But yeah, I guess it's that kind of taking control of not only the way that you look, but it's the way that you feel. And even I still literally get stressed talking about that. Like, even subconsciously, you're like, this is really shameful. But when you think about it, it is massively weird that we can happily talk about sex with a partner, or like sex with a man, or now I guess we're happy to talk about different relationships that aren't just heterosexual. But yeah. when it comes to self-pleasure for women, it's just not a conversation that anyone's really ready to talk about. But it's so, I don't know why it's not, because pleasure is wonderful. It's yeah. like eating.
Exactly.
It's like a really cheap way of feeling great.
I think stopping or hindering self-pleasure is a form of control.
Mm.
Sexually controlling people is the ultimate control, because it's the ultimate compulsion.
Yeah.
So it comes from a very dark place. And that's why it's so exciting that we've come into this very light, exposed yeah. place where we are freeing ourselves up. And what's next?
Yeah.
I mean, this is just the beginning. This is just the start. This is the shedding of the chrysalis and this kind of little butterfly coming out.
I love that.
Starting to shed our stuff and open our wings. Like, the next stage that we are heading to is very exciting.
And aside from female pleasure, which is one thing I think probably the most stigmatized part, but even female health, like with your vagina and your vulva.
Intimate feminine care.
Yeah, I know. All the words that they use for like feminine hygiene. It's all very like hush, hush, secret.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's even in America, where a lot of these brands, the innovation has come, they still call it V-care.
Yeah.
Because actually, if you, for ads on Facebook, for any kind of paid activity on Facebook or Instagram, you're not allowed to use the word vagina.
I can't believe that.
So you have to come up with euphemisms or pictures of fruit and flowers. And it feels so 1950s. It's
yeah.
like, come on, Facebook. I understand, you know, I understand not having the word vagina as an open word, but the algorithm is so sophisticated now that it can contextualize the usage. And if you're talking about a gynecological cancer, or if you're talking about a product that deodorizes your vulva, you have to be able to use these
yeah.
terms to actually show people what
yeah.
it's actually for. And the fact that you can't feels old-fashioned. It does feel a bit sexist,
that
to be
is,
honest.
And what about if you wanted to write penis? Are you allowed?
So you can't write penis, but there are so many words that you can use for the male member across Facebook. So it's, yeah, so the direct...
It is skewed.
Yeah, it is definitely skewed. The direct medical terms, if that's
yeah.
the best way of putting it, you can't use for either, which is kind of mental.
Yeah, even the conversation around, like as we're saying, the vulva vagina debate, which I still find it hard to get it around to saying my vulva. I don't know why that is. I think it's because
by the end of
like
this
vulgar.
Conversation, you'll be fine.
Yeah, I know.
Vulva, vulva, vulva.
I do correct people now, and they just think I'm so boring. I am really boring though, because I correct people on a lot of things. So I just will stop getting invited to stuff, I think.
can always come over to us.
Yeah, thank you so much. What have you found as well? Have you found any resistance, like, in terms of, I guess you did. Did you do any, like, kind of consumer, what's it called when you get, like, a room of people?
And like,
you,
market research?
Yeah.
We haven't yet, actually. I think it's something that we all believe in so much that we are just going to launch it.
Yeah, I love that.
And I think it's going to be very well received.
Yeah.
But that's all part of the conversation.
Yeah.
Is this the right thing? Are these the products that you want to see? Like, what else do you want to see? I mean, we haven't really gone into menstruation that much yet.
Yeah.
But I want to look into, like, what's the best menstrual cup out there? What's the best biodegradable, recyclable, recycled tampon?
Such a big industry now, because I have my menstrual cup is from Time of the Month. It's great. But there are so many companies out there now that do recycle. Like, it's amazing that I remember getting this menstrual cup from this brand. And I was really excited, by the way. I'm completely converted if you don't use one yet. It's the best thing ever. And they were the first one I've heard of that did, like, biodegradable, organic. And now it's 2 years later, and it's just amazing that these conversations are happening, and that there's massive Instagram pages with huge followings, and that we're talking so much about.
It used to be called a moon cup.
But yeah, wasn't that, I think that might be a specific brand.
Is it? But that was the only one that was.
Yeah, I think that is it.
And now the menstrual cups, they've got properly different shaped ones, like the deep, the shallow, the ones you can have sex with.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
I can't remember that one's name, but that actually looks like super cool.
High tech.
And it fits so well into this sustainability, reusability, refillable beauty side of things that it's just, I can't imagine it not being something. And we'll look back on it like, why didn't we have this as a category years ago?
Yeah, I think that's definitely going to be a great category that you should break into. But I just think, even talking about, as we're going through the conversation, talking about female pleasure and beauty does just make so much sense, because what makes you feel beautiful is what, when you're feeling your happiest, your most content. And as we know, everyone always looks great after a shag.
No blusher needed.
So I wanted to touch on a little bit more, because talking about female empowerment and female liberation, being a woman at the top of your game as you are, Cult Beauty is receiving awards left, right and centre. How did it come naturally? You said you were in fashion journalism, then you used PR, but going into business and now being a co-founder of a company that's clearly making waves, did you foresee that? Was it difficult?
I knew it was a great idea. I had a real belief in it. I had no concept of the fact of whether or not I could do it. I got here by completely messing it up again and again and again, and hopefully mostly learning from it. And it's just been an evolution, just like anything else. But I think it's just about really believing in something incredibly deeply and being the stubbornest person about that, and just kind of keeping the focus, being a little bit flexible around it, because if you're static, you'll get broken.
Yeah.
But I didn't think that this was necessarily going to be the way that the path would end
up. What was Cult Beauty when it first started?
It was me and Jess in a basement flat in Islington.
And would you have a magazine, or how did it?
So we started out when we were building the site, which took a bit longer than we thought it would, because we didn't have quite enough money to really incentivize the developers to prioritize their best people on it. We started a blog. So we had a blog that in 2008 that we were writing to just really build the understanding of what this brand was.
Yeah.
And that blog was going for about 8 months before we got to actually put the blog into the actual site and make it into what we always wanted it to be, which was the store. So getting access. I mean, loads of brands said no to us to start off with. And we just had to try different ways of doing things. When they said no to us coming in and buying from a wholesale model, we would say, okay, well, we'll stop talking to the distribution arm. And I went and spoke to the marketing department and said, this is amazing. This is really going to elevate your brand. Please help us get to this stage. And actually, we had some of the PR departments who actually gave us PR stock
amazing.
To sell on the site so that we could actually get going with their brand on the site. And then once we'd sold like a decent amount, the PR sort of turned around and said, look, we actually can't keep selling the stock, because we were sending them the money and they were actually using it towards their Christmas party.
Oh my God.
So they then referred us back to the distribution arm. We were saying, look, we really think we can make you decent money on top of really being great for your brand. And they're like, how do you know? And we're like, because we already have.
That's amazing. So you were just kind of going, I guess you were like plodding along. There was no backlog of capital that you were using, or no, like it was very much like.
Well, I mean, Jess was using savings and I was using compensation from a car accident where I broke my back.
Oh my gosh.
So I broke my back in 2002, and then I managed to get compensation from it about 4 years later. And I just sat on that money and knew that I really wanted to create something really positive from this horrible negative
situation. That's really cool in a situation that's come from there.
And it is, and it did. So it really feels like there was a really healing process to that as well, you know, using this money to create something that then took me onto a path I never thought I would be on, especially when I was sitting in a cast at home.
Oh my gosh. And now you employ, it's pretty mostly female, isn't it? Was it all women?
So in our HQ, we index definitely towards the female, but then in our distribution centre, it levels things out a bit.
Yeah, no, but I'm saying it's amazing, because what I love is when you have female-led companies that are giving opportunities to women.
Oh, from that point of view, I mean, our board is 60% women.
Which is amazing.
Our senior leadership team is 60% women. And I think there's just a feeling of equality. It's not necessarily about promoting a woman over a man. It's just an equal situation whereby skill and excellence will drive you forward and you won't have somebody put their hand on your head stopping you simply because of your sex.
Yeah, exactly. And also, I think you don't know, we can't talk about it yet, but you're going to be working with a charity.
So yes, a charity that specializes in gynecological cancers. So we should have that all finalized in the next few days, and we'll do big announcements around that. But we'll be giving a percentage of sales from this category to the charity. And we're also going to be doing a bunch of internal stuff to raise money for them as well. We've given them a target that we're going to raise for the year, and we really want to smash it.
Oh, that's really cool, because it's all kind of going full circle. Like, everything is feeding into itself, if that makes sense. So you're giving women the opportunity to become the best, most fulfilled version of themselves, and then that's feeding around into more jobs, which is feeding into charity, and it's just a really nice, like, full circle.
It just feels right.
Yeah.
It feels absolutely right to be doing this right now. And I feel privileged to be able to do it, because we're in a time where we can.
Yeah.
You know, where we're enabled to do what we want to do as women. And that is, it is a privilege. Not everyone has this around the world. And it's something I'm incredibly grateful for.
Yeah, it's amazing. Do you have any other bits and bobs that you want to share with us?
About what other bits? Oh, you know, there's some quite amusing bits about vibrators. In the UK, there are more women that own a vibrator than there are households that own a dishwasher.
Oh, that's really funny.
Which really made me laugh. But actually, so that, talking about, there's the pleasure gap.
Yeah.
Which is talked about a little bit before, and it's just on surveys, only 39% of women say they usually or always orgasm during sex, compared to 91% of men.
But it's that idea that sex is over when the man finishes, isn't it? It's that idea that it's about his end game and not yours, which is just entirely... My favourite thing ever is that evolutionary-wise, the reason that women can have multiple orgasms is because we would have sex with as many partners as we could to accrue as much sperm as we could, and then the best sperm would win and we'd have their child. So we'd have sex with one man. Awesome. He'd fall asleep, because that's what they do. They get tired. So they get the hormone that makes them get really tired. And women get more aroused the more sex they have, like up until a certain point. So they would have sex with one partner, and then the idea was that the reason that women make noises as well is they would attract other men nearby, so they would know they were having sex. This is true. So all the sperm would compete with each other, and the best sperm would win.
Well, that's Darwinism for you.
And that's why it's so ridiculous that we have slut shaming and this idea that like women who have multiple sexual partners, because actually men are the ones that are actually designed to be territorial about the woman, because they want to protect their child that they're bringing on, so they will try and stay with that woman that's carrying their child, who's the most fertile. The woman's just going off and sleeping with as many men as she can. So that's actually just a fact for you, which I think is really interesting.
I love that fact. Yeah. I'm so going home and telling my husband that.
You need to
away.
Tell everyone that you know. It's the best thing, because I think someone was slut-shaming someone on Twitter once, and I found that direct thing and I just sent it. And I was like, look.
Ooh, can you send that to me?
Yeah, I'll find it for you. It's so fascinating. I remember reading it, I was like, this is the best thing ever. It's amazing though. And it's just all those things that we don't know, and how, like, that's the fact. That's written down. And yet somehow we're allowing men to call us a slut because we won't take their number.
Well, in ancient societies, women did actually rule the societies because they were the ones having babies. And actually they hadn't worked out that the act of sex was what caused the women to have the baby.
Really?
So they were seen as these goddesses and earth mothers who were the propagating the race. The sex was just fun bit that they were doing.
Oh my God, I didn't. Like, so they just thought it was like magic. They hadn't put two and two together. That's fascinating. That's so good.
Yeah.
I love that. But it's the same as like even when it comes to conversations around sexuality. Like in the Greek times, everyone was just shagging everyone, weren't they? So it's ridiculous that we've got any kind of like norms.
It all comes down to control.
Yeah.
I mean, having to define things in these very specific ways as to how to control people within society. And it started off with religion doing it, and then governments have come on and found there are other ways of doing it too. But I think this has been the wonderful thing about social media and the internet is you can't stop it.
Yeah.
It's like trying to stop a water.
It gives you windows into places you could never have seen before. I think that's what it's doing. It's like, you're right, it's allowing, it's gets rid of that control. Something else I wanted to ask you about, because I forgot we talked about this earlier, but talking about religion and pleasure, we briefly were talking about FGM and female genital mutilation, which I know we've had some laws kind of change over here in the UK, but that's obviously harrowing that that's going. It is a point of privilege for us to be able to talk about this, because obviously certain communities are really, really suffer with their own sexuality. And you said something really interesting about circumcision. What were you saying?
Yeah, I mean, it's circumcision in America is very prevalent, and it wouldn't be there if it wasn't for Mr. Kellogg, who didn't just make cereal.
I didn't know that.
He was also one of the most powerful lobbyists of his time, with the ear of government. And he was a fundamentalist Christian who believed that masturbation was bad and that circumcision prevented masturbation. And that is why that was then spun as a health issue in America. And actually almost every boy in the US is circumcised because of Mr. Kellogg.
That is ridiculous. Yeah, because I didn't really, because in the UK, I guess it's more prevalent in Jewish communities, but in America, it's everyone, isn't it?
It's everybody.
I can't believe
that. And that's
that.
The reason behind it. I mean, with Judaism, it's a faith thing and a symbol thing. But I mean, I personally disagree with cutting off bits of a body.
Yeah, me too.
Generally, every bit of your body has a really good function.
Yeah.
And we might not know about it
yet. It's the same as body hair, though. Like, we're conditioned to believe that shaving your hair off is more hygienic because Gillette or whoever it was at some point in time thought we better have some female clientele actually because we could make a bit more money if they're
and
buying
boy,
razors
did they?
Too. Yeah, they did. I mean, even their commercial the other day, I hate to be a cynic, but very good. But I'm sure that's because they know that most of the men who buy Gillette razors are men who are married to women who are doing the shopping, which sounds really bad, but I do think that that was a bit of that. Great marketing, though. But.
Definitely. Well, now I'm pregnant, I've stopped shaving my legs because it's actually really hard to reach some of the bits.
When my sister was pregnant, I actually did shave her fanny pack before she went into go give
up. You are a good sister.
I had to kneel on the floor in the shower underneath her bump because she couldn't reach over it. And I was like, for fuck's sake, underneath.
I mean, I've shaved my friend's armpit hair before after she had a motorbike accident. I thought that was pretty good friend, but
I used to wax all my friends' fannies at uni. They would come into my room and it was like a waxing service. I literally did everyone's.
Oh, this doesn't surprise me.
I'd be like, welcome to my salon. Yes. And I used to do their fake tan.
We'll work for vodka.
Yeah, exactly. Oh yeah, I haven't got quite to the I do never really shave my legs, but they're really blonde.
Yeah.
And I do love the idea that I'd be feminist enough to shave my armpits, but I never let them go long enough to get them soft. They're always quite spiky and that's just not comfortable.
You can't get past that phase.
No. I should do harder. Really, I know. One day I will do that. But yeah, very big congratulations on the baby.
Thank you very much.
That's very exciting. When are they arriving?
So I'm having a little girl in June.
Still summer baby.
Yes.
That's very exciting.
Little Cancerian.
Oh, that is so exciting. Has anything changed in your, I don't know, has being pregnant changed your opinion on things or do you feel much the same?
Well, it makes you think about the future a little bit more, mm. especially having a little girl as well.
Yeah.
It's like, what's it going to be like for her? I mean, when I was growing up, I was sort of between phases a little bit. They call it the Xennial, so it's like Generation X and Millennial mix, right on the cusp. And the definition of feminine and female was being challenged in the 90s when I was a teenager. So there was the beginnings of something that was quite different, but you were still not expected to go out and be an entrepreneur, not expected to go out and do that. You were expected to go out and get a job and do well in your career, but this whole idea of just taking over something and owning it and changing things was not really necessarily on the roster.
Yeah, I think maybe what's happened, I think it was more polarizing back then, whereas like feminism's fed into the mainstream now, hopefully. It still probably hasn't trickled down to like the less privileged areas.
I think to say you were a feminist when I was growing up would have been, it's quite a... Yeah, it would be quite a punchy thing to say to people. Like, it would cause a negative reaction in some, because it was always associated with man-hater.
Yeah.
It's like, this is so not the truth. You can be multitasking.
Yeah.
You can love women and love men.
I know. I get it all the time whenever I post anything. The guys will just be like, not all men. And I'm like, if you have to say that, you're probably one of the men. Because unless you've done something wrong... You probably just won't comment. I'll be like something like men need to do better. And they'll be like, I actually am absolutely fine. I haven't done anything wrong. I mean,
ever.
You probably clearly have then. It's really funny. But I do think the future for women, well, the future looks like it's going to be female. I do think it is getting better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think but just to have a place of equality.
Yeah.
That is a real nirvana.
Yeah.
To go back to the 90s.
I've literally loved chatting to you. I feel like I've learned loads.
It's been awesome, awesome fun. And I just want to say one last thing is join the Vulvolution.
Yes. Yay! Amazing. If people want to get involved in the hashtag Vulvolution, have I said that right? Online, on Instagram, where should we be looking to find you?
Well, the conversation is going to start on cult beauty, but that's not where it's going to end.
Amazing. Fab. So everyone can find you at cult beauty.
At cult beauty.
On Twitter, Instagram, everything.
Twitter, Instagram and Facebook.
All the places. Thank you so much, Lex.
It's been my absolute pleasure.
Oh, well, pleasure's what we're looking for.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for listening, guys. I'll see you soon. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.